It's L.A. Lloyd here, and we're very excited to welcome Slash back for his eighth appearance on The Rock 30. It was October of 2022, last time we caught up. He's in Australia now. You got to love Zoom technology, and good to see you, man.
It's good to see you, too.
I kind of feel like the theme of today's show is Slash gets the blues, and I mean that in a good way, because I'm going to be premiering a song later on today. It's Howlin' Wolf's song, Killing Floor. But let's kind of go way back to the beginning. What is the age you kind of remember hearing your first blues, and maybe was there a blues artist that really influenced you to pick up the guitar?
Well, okay, so when I was really young and I was living in England, it was the Stones and the Kinks and like the Moody Blues and Yardbirds. So that was all very blues based music, but you know, for me, it was just the music that I was exposed to at such a young age. And I loved it. And then I moved to the U.S. and my grandmother was the one that really played blues for me. And I don't think she was trying to influence me or anything. She was just playing it. You know, there was a lot of music in my household.
Yeah.
And it was B.B. King specifically who really spoke to me. And I had no aspirations to pick up a guitar at that time or anything. It was just cool music. So I remembered that. And then when I did, you know, fast forward a few years, pick up the guitar, the guys that I was listening to and learning from at that time all took me back to B.B. King.
Wow.
So it was funny, full circle kind of a moment. But I would say that, you know, as a rock guitar player, I sort of came up predominantly influenced by guys who were influenced heavily by blues guys. So I went back and started listening to Albert King and B.B. King and all the three Kings, actually Freddie King as well, but Buddy Guy, and you know, like got turned on to Robert Johnson and all, you know, all that kind of thing. And so it really is very much a part of what I do in rock guitar. Like I never jumped on the sort of 80s flashbang technique, finger style, all that kind of stuff that was really popular in the 80s, because right. I was so rooted in this old school shit. And so it's always been a big part of me. And then I had a lot of different guys that I used to jam with in sort of blues cover bands and stuff over the years. And a couple of these guys that I used to have an actual band with, that we used to tour around in this drunken little outfit called Slash's Blues Ball.
Yeah, I remember that.
He's the bass player, and Teddy Andriotis is the keyboard player and singer. And so I've kept in touch with these guys over the years, and I've always wanted to sort of put something together based on Slash's Blues Ball. And so all of a sudden, out of the blue, during a break between Guns N' Roses touring legs, I thought, you know, I'm going to do this right this minute. I've got 3 weeks. I'm gonna do this. And so we threw it together, and here we are.
Well, you know, tell me about the rest of the guys in the band as well, because obviously you had to get the full band together to put these instrumentals down before you started getting the vocalist involved. So, I mean, when you did get serious and, you know, kind of relive the blues ball thing, who's the other guys in there that you felt were right to complete it all?
Johnny and Ted, who I just mentioned, those were the guys I worked with years ago, and right. They're hardcore blues guys, and really, really well versed and great musicians and all that. And then Tash Neal, who plays guitar and sings in this outfit, and he'll be the primary lead singer when we go out on tour. I met him at a blues festival that I played at in Los Angeles, you know, like I don't know, maybe 6 years ago or 7 years ago,
right?
And he was phenomenal, really nice guy, and but really great voice. And so when I was putting this together, I called him. And he's the guy that sings. I don't know if you've heard the whole record, but there's a version of Living for the City.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Michael Jerome Moore, who plays drums, was actually a very 11th hour discovery, because the drummer that we originally started working with, it didn't work out. And we were just about to go into the studio. I was like, what are we going to do? And so I had to audition drummers really quickly. And Michael Jerome Moore was recommended to me by Jimmy Vivino, right? Okay. And because I'd asked him about, you know, do you know any good like blues and soul and rock drummers all combined into one? And he gave me some names, and Michael was one of them. And he came down to the studio, and he literally played like four bars And I was like, oh, this is the guy.
Wow. That quick, huh?
He's an amazing drummer. Yeah, well, when that magic happens, you hear it right away.
Yeah.
Anyway, and that's really, it's just basically the five of us.
Well, you teamed up with Mike Klink again, which I was really happy to read about that. I mean, you know, obviously the long history you have with him, but why did you feel like he was the right guy to kind of take you through this genre, if you will?
Because Mike is as well as being a great producer, he's one of the best engineers I've ever worked with. I mean, he really knows how to get sounds. I mean, and I'm talking about like real sort of analog, natural tones and stuff. So I didn't even, it took me maybe all of a second and a half to say Mike, you know. And he was great because he, you know, I sort of had this vague way of, I didn't really explain to everybody what I was doing. I called Johnny and Ted up and I said, let's put together these songs, and we started jamming them, and it was a very loosey-goosey kind of environment. Didn't tell those guys about all the singers I was planning on doing. And with Mike, he didn't know what the fuck I was talking about. I was like, well, I'm just gonna do this covers record. And so he came in after we'd been playing for about a week and he listened to it, and we both agreed that we had to get a new drummer. We got a new drummer, and it's just, he just sort of like grasped it, and then we went straight into the studio and we just captured these live recordings, and the tones are just so honest and genuine. And that's why I called Mike, because that's what, you know. And it was, man, it was really a great experience working with Mike on a full record again. I haven't done it in a long time.
Yeah, I know, it's been a long time. And while you were recording, I mean, everyone's playing together live in this room with an emphasis on the, you know, as you mentioned, the improvisation. Why was it pretty important to do that? I mean, because it's something I just learned about having that analog feel that Mike brought to it. And then you're getting to do a little bit of improvisation there in the studio. You're all playing live. I mean, it sounds like it's the perfect way to put together a blues record.
Well, that's, I mean, God, I couldn't imagine going into the studio and trying to construct a recording for a blues song,
right,
you know, for old school rock and roll or R&B or blues or any of that. You know, it's just sort of something that you work out the parts and everybody starts to come up with their own thing, and you just play it naturally and play it live. And now, and that's a really, to get the spirit of something is the reason. I mean, okay, you have all the instruments and you put it all together, but it's really important how everybody plays off of each other, and the sort of emotional flow of the material is how everybody reacts to this bridge or to that part of the guitar solo section or the chorus, you know, and everybody has their own natural interpretation of what's about to happen. And the only way to really capture that is everybody playing at the same time. You can't really phone it in. You can't, you know, have a drummer play to a click over there, and then you put a bass on it from over here, and then the guitars are done in Guam, and you know, it's just, you have to sort of all be together. And in this recording, we tried to capture as many live vocals as we could in the studio when we did the actual tracks, but we only had not even 2 weeks to do that, right? I think it was 10 days. So because of the schedules, I actually had to take the tape and go to different studios around the US where different people were. Like Brian Johnson is in Florida. Paul Rogers was in Palm Springs. Some people came into LA and did it at my place. So it's live, except for those vocal recordings were done after the fact.
Well, you know, and speaking of the vocals, I mean, obviously, well, you've got a great list of vocalists on there, but I mean, how does that process start? Do you just pick up the phone and start calling? Do you put together a wish list you write down? I mean, how in the hell do you even corral all these people together?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because you just sort of do it and you don't really think about it.
Yeah.
You know, first put together the songs, which songs we wanted to do, and then who do you think, you know, would be great of all the singers that you know, who would be great on each individual song. And it just sort of happens naturally. Like Brian Johnson for Killing Floor was automatic. I don't think I thought about anybody else. He was I just know his voice and I know him. But, you know, really important aspect of this is, you know, when you have an idea like that and then you contact them, if they know the material, if they're inspired by the material, if it means something to them, then it just clicks. And that's what you're sort of going for, is like you come up with an idea for a song and you have an idea of who you might want to sing it, and you suggest it to them, they're like, oh my God, that song meant something to me in some capacity. And then you're automatically doing it together for a shared passion for the material. And that's where you get sort of the natural inspiration. Anyway, so that's how this record, for the most part, was put together. Is I just picked the songs and think who I'd want to have sing it and call them up. And by and large, they knew the material and were totally into it.
Yeah.
Iggy Pop was the only one that I actually went to him. I'd heard that he had always wanted to do a blues recording, but had never had the opportunity to do it. And so I called him up, and it turns out that was the case. And so I hadn't picked a song for him, but I asked him if there was something that he would really like to do. And he picked the Lightning Hopkins song. Mm-hmm. And that was just, and it was really a special moment doing it with him, because it was an outlet for him that he'd never been provided before.
Yeah.
And so he just sort of like delivered this thing that meant something to him in a special way. And it was really cool to be part of that.
Well, a thing that I really loved about the single is watching you and Brian and Steven just sitting there listening back to the track, man. And I just see this sense of satisfaction. I mean, I can feel how you guys were just loving it, you know, while you were doing it. I mean, the footage they captured when you were listening back to the track, I mean, it was really nice seeing that satisfaction that all three of you collectively had.
Oh, I actually hadn't recognized that particular sort of angle on it, but mm-hmm. I think when you're going to do an old song that is so important to the makeup of your existence, right? And you go to sort of recreate that material, you want to do it justice. You know, you don't want to do something that is going to embarrass the original artist had they been alive.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so when you get together and you feel like you did something worthwhile, maybe it just comes across. You can see that.
Yeah.
We had good time doing it.
Well, another artist I was very happy to see on there. I've been living in Austin, Texas since 95. I actually saw Gary Clark Jr. play on 6th Street when he was in the 6th grade. So I've seen this guy's career go, you know, for many years. So I had to ask you about Gary, man, and working with him.
Oh, man, that was really sort of special. I mean, Gary's been around for a while. I didn't really become familiar with him until probably about maybe 10 years ago or something like okay. that. And I just, he's such a great, like his personality and his music is something that really speaks to me. Like it really touches me. And so we played a gig. Well, we didn't play it together. We played the same venue a day apart. And so I went, I was playing with the Conspirators. I went the day before and saw him play. And it was just great. And then we met for the first time. And I was shocked that he actually knew who I was. And it turns out that he, as a kid, he was a big, I guess he was a big Guns fan or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when fast forward a couple of years, he and I have kept in touch. And I was putting this together. And I thought, with Gary, I think it was more that I wanted to do something with Gary. And I had Crossroads as an idea, and I called him up about it, and he was totally down to do it. And that's how that sort of came together. But also, he's working on a new record that hasn't come out yet, but he was working on it at the time. And he reached sort of an impasse where he'd been working on this record, and he just got to a place where he was like, I don't know, feeling just sort of like pressured and stuck. So when I called him up, it was a great outlet for him to get on a plane, fly out to L.A., and do something that nobody had any expectations necessarily.
That's awesome.
Whatever it was a relief for him. And he came in and he was just f-ing cool. And those guitars that he put on that song are just sublime. I mean, you know, I'm very honored to share that recording with him.
Wow.
And then he went back and he kicked ass on his record. He just needed that break. And it was just something sort of magical about that.
I love the way that worked out. Well, let me just kind of go through a few more vocalists. I know we're kind of running out of time, but maybe give me a line or two about, and let's start off with Billy Gibbons, man. Give me some vibes on Billy.
Billy and I have been friends for a long time, but he's one of my all-time favorite guitar players. And he's such a f-ing great, he's been around for a long time, but he's really down to earth and very sort of laid back, and he just tours all the time, and he's always jamming. He's very generous kind of individual, And I wanted him for this song, and I really had to chase him down to get it. And he happened to be going into Palm Springs for something. And I'd already recorded the music and sent it to him in Palm Springs. And he put down some guitars. And the guitar, there's some lines on that guitar solo that he put on that are just like so amazingly perfect, you know. And this is why Billy's Billy.
Right.
And then, but the vocal he did was just awesome. Yeah. You know, and that was something he didn't know what I was up to. And I'm one of those guys, I think he appreciates what it is that I do, but he didn't know what the fuck I was going to do to that Muddy Waters song. And so he was nervous that I was probably going to do some sort of like maybe 80s approach to it or something like that. But when I sent him the track, he was like really pleased and put a great vocal on it. And I was happy. I didn't want to try and make Billy do something he didn't want to do, but he dug it.
Chris Stapleton, man. I mean, that one. Wow.
Yeah.
That's just good for the ears and the soul, man, to hear it.
Yeah. Well, Chris is, I mean, it goes without saying he's such an incredible talent. And I'd done some shows with him. He played some shows with Guns N' Roses out on the road. And I'm still sort of just awed by everything that he does. And I have to admit, I was a little trepidatious about even calling him to do this, but his cadence and his drawl and that whole thing delivering, oh, well, just, it was so like I had it. So I called him up and he was really humble and gracious about it. And we were trying to lock schedules, and he finally found a minute where he could do it, and it's just perfect.
It sure is. Last question before we close it out. You close out the album there with this instrumental called Metal Chestnut that I think Mike might have suggested you bring something original to it, or what's the story on this track?
That was basically it, because we just finished. We're going into the studio, I think it was the following day or in 2 days, to start recording. And he goes, do you have like an original for this thing? And it hadn't even occurred to me. So it was totally Mike. And I was like, well, no, maybe, you know. And so I went home and I wrote something really quick and came back the next day. I mean, it came to me really quick. And it's just something that, and then I went the next day. And it was funny because, you know, I know Johnny and I know Teddy really well, but I haven't done any original material with these guys in a band context ever. And then there's two guys that are playing that I've never worked with before in any real capacity. So to deliver an instrumental piece of music and have everybody learn it was very daunting.
Yes.
And I remember going in, I was really nervous and I was playing it too fast and whatever, but they were very sort of cool and patient and picked up on it right away. And it just sort of blossomed into this little thing. And it's very spontaneous in the studio, sort of live kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I was really happy with it. And the name Metal Chestnut was something I overheard in the cans. I thought somebody said, and I thought it was really funny, but they said something else. But it sounded like Metal Chestnut during that track, during the recordings. I decided to keep that as a title.
Well, it definitely works for me, man. Well, thanks for being on here. And like I said, I can't wait to see you come out there and do some of those songs live that you mentioned. Once you finally get back in the U.S., you're going to be gone for a while. But Orgy of the Dam coming out in May, and we'll be playing that single there a lot here on The Rock 30. Slash, always a pleasure having you on the show, man.
All right, man. Good to see you, and I'm sure I'll be talking to you again sometime in the near future.
You got it, brother. Take care.